I did wanted to follow up a little bit about the last time we talked about those proposed new developments on Kirkwood.
Yes.
And finally, we got to see them last week at the Planning Commission. And I believe a 6 or 7 story hotel, a bank headquarters, and I think there's a 4 story mixed development that would also run along 4th Street.
Right.
A lot going in at once. I think that was my first reaction. And I know, again, you said the exact same thing. But now that we've been able to see it, is there any concern about all of that going in at one time?
Sure. Yeah, there is concern about them going in at one time. There's also, interestingly enough, concern about them not going in at one time. Because if you don't have it all happen, if you're not planning for it all at once, then what does that all look like after things are being done piecemeal? So in part, we really wanted the developer to look at this as a whole, that we want to look at the grand scheme of things in that area, not just say, okay, we'll go build this, and then 6 months to a year later, we'll build something else, and we have kind of a crazy quilt pattern in there. And it's also, you know, you're right, that people, I kept saying this is going to be bigger than I think people might imagine as being proposed, but it's even bigger than what you've seen so far, because the Workingman's Building is another ONB-owned site, same landowner as owns the big 4 properties on Kirkwood and 4th Street. And so up Kirkwood a bit, separated from those 4 properties, is another property, and that's the Workingman's Building. And what will it be used for? We already have seen that a CVS is very likely to locate there. So there's a lot of change coming to those areas. And part of the spillover of that is, in addition to just the dramatic change that will happen to the geography there, you're going to see a lot more people living there, working there, visiting. You're also going to see, and this is something that, gosh, it's been now 16 to 18 months ago when I started talking about the parking issues downtown. You know, I kept referring to the unofficial parking. It's things that I've benefited from, many have benefited from, for not just years, decades, in downtown Bloomington, where the generosity of private landowners who have allowed us to park on their private surface parking lots after hours, all the different banks, now even ONB to this day, allowing people to park there. Of course, that's not our parking, but it's become our parking unofficially over the years. And that's all going to be built on, including the Workingman's site. So, you know, there's a lot of change coming to Kirkwood, 4th Street, that a year from now, it's not going to look at all like it looks today.
And that was one of the major items that came up at that plan commission, and many churches showed up to voice their support, we'll say, for more parking. And I believe at the end of that meeting, one of the plan commission members said, well, that's not really what we approve here. That's
right.
For a different meeting. And he came really close to actually giving your phone number, I think, at the end of that meeting, and said, talk to the mayor, talk to the city. What would be your response to those that say, what's going to happen to all this parking?
Well, that's what I've been asking people to plan for the last 16 to 18 months. And that, of course, is what we said why we were doing metering. It was to manage on-street parking, to create greater turnover, because all of that parking is going to go away. And it's a natural human instinct for people to come to government for assistance on that. But those aren't government-owned lots. Those aren't public lots. Again, we've used them as public lots, but they're all on private property. And so, you know, we'll continue to have the lot at the corner of 4th and Washington, and eventually something will happen there because the Bloomington Transit headquarters has moved, so that property will become available. And then you've got the old post office site, which is church-owned, and something may happen there in terms of parking as well. So, you know, it's right now there are people going to the Plan Commission or to the City Council or to the City Administration sort of implying that we shouldn't let this development occur because it was taking away our parking. But of course, it was never our parking to begin with. This has always been private landowners who have graciously allowed parking to occur on their property after hours or on weekends, Sundays in particular. But you know, we also have to be careful about government money can't be used to build church parking. You know, it's at least I think people would ask questions about the use of public dollars for that. And it's not the promotion of religion. It's again the whole question about what's appropriate. But Obviously, what is needed is parking, public parking in the downtown area. And as I've said, again, going back 16, 18 months, is that eventually meter revenue, as we've paid for the meters themselves, one of the many things that it can go into is to establish additional public parking downtown. That, you know, the garages don't make money, and either we attract private developers in to build parking garages, and the only way they do that is if there is metered streets. You'll never find a private garage entity willing to come into a community that has free on-street parking because they can't compete with that. So in part, meters may drive the private market, but if not, either a public-private or just a public garage being built downtown with finance through meter revenue is a possibility long-term.
Along with a lot of these developments come with, and even some of the residential ones, if you take a little drive through town, come with some of those recommendations for the commercial on the first floor. And of course, I think we see a lot of that too with these new developments.
Yes.
But some of those, even down Morton, are still empty. Is there a need for more of that commercial space, or is that more of to the future?
It is looking toward the future. I don't know that, you know, it's eye the beholder as to whether it's needed or not. I guess if you're a retail looking for a downtown location, then yes, it's needed and you want more to select from, more space to select from. But yes, there are private developers who have told us that they want the space to be at least convertible, meaning we'll try to get retail, we'll try to get office, but if it doesn't work, we would like that to be residential because that's where the demand is. But what that will lead to, and the reason we have tried to fend off some of that, is because it simply is becoming more student rental. And we're really trying to have a balanced demographic housing in downtown, and we'll continue to do that, especially with the 12 acres that we're developing. The former IU property that the city has purchased. So there's a lot happening, and trying to make all those pieces fit and thinking long term. You know, but we are not going to, just because there's not a run on retail space right now, not be thinking long term about what we want there. Do we want to permanently make that student rental housing? You know, we don't think so. On the other hand, is it space that will be filled immediately? Possibly not. But you know, when we look at these O&B properties alone, you know, there are going to be many dozens more people living there, working there, and visiting either as customers of retail or restaurant, or as customers of the hotel, you know, patrons of a hotel. So there was a lot more on street parking demand that's going to be created, as we've, you know, been talking about for a couple of years now. And this, it's been policy that was developed by the Plan Commission and the City Council, was to promote underparking, to make parking more difficult. And I don't know whether we'll revisit that issue or not. You know, the administration expressed some concerns about that when it started, gosh, 5 years ago, and before that even, talking about, shouldn't there be a 1-to-1 ratio, or should properties be underparked, meaning that there will be one spot for every two or three vehicles. And because that was the policy that others decided they wanted to implement, we knew that there would be additional pressures on street parking.
I see the CVS is going in on Kirkwood, and this kind of brings up the whole standardized business ordinance,
right,
that was recently put together. It came from yourself,
yep,
in regards of keeping chain restaurants, and I think this was sort of a balanced final ordinance that everyone was able to agree upon. Do you think that it worked in this case with the CVS?
Yeah, it wasn't my original intent to include retail this time. We were looking at chain restaurants, and I still believe that should have been done. I mean, yes, in the end, that something passed that was viewed as a compromise, but I think we will, as a community, I just feel like we'll regret that we didn't implement something stronger as we see chain retail, especially with the student housing coming into downtown and a hotel. You know, there are oftentimes patrons of hotels or certainly students living in downtown looking for familiar brands. And so I'm not just worried about student housing because it's student housing. I'm worried about what kind of market it drives. and the retail market that it's driving are familiar brands, chain restaurants, chain retail. Now, I'm very pleased to see a pharmacy coming into downtown. I think that's something we absolutely want to encourage. And even though it's a chain, there aren't a lot of private pharmacies, and so it's certainly not something that the look of the pharmacy is important to us, and that's what this ordinance allowed an opportunity to do, was to decide how it can fit in to the architecture, the unique community character of downtown. That was important to us. So in that way, yes, it worked, but I do think that we'll start to see, maybe very soon, a chain restaurant on Restaurant Row, and that just to me will be out of place, will harm the character of that area. It doesn't mean it's going to be the end of downtown. I'm not trying to exaggerate this, but I do think that more and more that we homogenize our downtown, the more it starts to look like what State Road 37 and soon I-69 looks like, where you could plop somebody down out there right now and they would have no idea what town they're in because there's nothing unique to Bloomington, Monroe County there. And I don't want that to happen on Kirkwood or on 4th Street. We're a long way from that kind of a problem happening, but you know, I've lived in Bloomington long enough to know that there were those of us who were upset about a McDonald's locating on Kirkwood, and it was the only chain restaurant. There are many more than that now. The balance hasn't tipped, and that was what most of the opponents to my proposal said, was the balance hasn't tipped. I just don't understand why we would wait until it tips before we step in. But we did what we did, and that's what the City Council chose to enact, and so yes, the first time around, it worked well.
Just in the current news, of course, I think we can't go a day without hearing about Ebola, and just curious with all the international students and being Indiana University here in Bloomington, has this anything about this crossed your desk about if for some reason that it would happen to come here?
Not in a formal way, only in kind of informal discussions in the community with both the hospitals, but also with the county. You know, the county health department is in touch with the state health department, and the state has done a good job of communicating I know they've communicated to the departments of health around the state. I assume they've communicated to hospitals throughout the state as well. And, you know, this isn't the first time, it's obviously the first time that Ebola has been in the news for Americans. Not the first time globally, but it's the first time for Americans. But it's not the first time that there's been discussion of a disease, even an airborne infections that we've talked in Bloomington before about these issues, and you know, H1N1, and there's been a lot of other things that this community has practiced for. I don't think anybody can be prepared for everything, and being the best prepared and going through as many trainings as possible is what's most important, and I feel like the county and the state especially, and it's their health is their jurisdiction, and I feel like they're doing all that they can do right now.
Ruth from Bloomington wrote an email. She said the homeless are now hanging around Seminary Park. When winter sets in, where will the homeless go, and is the city establishing a shelter?
Well, I will say a little bit of a correction to that. It's not, people make the assumption that's the homeless hanging around Seminary Park, and it's, and in some cases that's true. But there are many others, and unfortunately, where there have been people who are experiencing homelessness in a park, there are others who, in many ways, will prey on that population, and that is a not-so-veiled reference to drug dealing, and so it's not all the people that you might see aren't necessarily homeless to begin with. Now, it's still an issue. And for those in terms of the winter, you know, the city has always been one of the partners and either providing space or contributing resources to the winter shelter, and the winter shelter plans are underway again, and that's something that, you know, we'll continue to do. And of course, there continue to be homeless shelters year-round. The city is one of you as a city taxpayer are one of the biggest funders of sheltering for the homeless during the winter times, and we'll continue to do that.
Frank wrote an email as well. This is an interesting one. His wife and I own a condo in an apartment-type building in the downtown. Mm-hmm. A recently purchased unit is now listed on the internet as a nightly rental. The owners don't provide breakfast or live in the building, and then, of course, the complaints of late-night noise by the occupants of the rental. He did call the planning department and was told that it's not regulated, even though it's hotly debated right. within city government. Are there any regulations on condos and houses in Bloomington that you know of about and being rented?
Yeah, this is the Airbnb, one of a number of the kind of apps that are available now for people when they're traveling the world, not just in the country. And the same is true with rideshare programs. And we're having that issue with established taxi companies now seeing this new form of competition. You know, shouldn't they be viewed as a taxi company? And Uber is the big one globally. And others say, well, no, it's not a taxi service, it's a rideshare. So it's not really been hotly debated within city government, if they mean just in Bloomington city government. It is being hotly debated among local governments around the country and even state legislatures. And I've heard that there may be legislation introduced in the Indiana General Assembly on these very issues because there are people upset about them and people who support them. But this is one where if there are laws that are specific to registered rental properties, but it has to do with the number of nights and if someone is advertising this to be, you know, is it a night to night or is it a long-term lease? Is it a month lease, a year lease? And that's how people are getting around some of those laws right now. So we'd have to look at every fact pattern separately and decide whether the current law applies to it, and if it doesn't, whether it ought to. But it's clear there are people who are now leasing their private space out and not calling it a rental. And we've had the opposite happen. We've had people who have used Airbnb as a lessor, but you know, a tenant, a resident, whatever you want to call them, a guest, and then will say they aren't going to leave, which is hard to imagine. But they'll say, "No, I'm protected. You have to give me 30 days notice." You know, how can you operate and say you're kind of like a bed and breakfast? They don't have to give 30 days notice. Only landlords have to do that, but you're claiming you're not a landlord, you're not a tenant. It is an interesting debate going on around, the globe, certainly within the United States, and we'll have to work on it.
And I assume if they're having problems with noise, he can contact the police department.
In terms of noise ordinance, you're right, I missed that. The noise ordinance is an issue. Standalone, doesn't matter what you are, whether you're a rental property, privately owned residents, but in the complicated relationship between the lessor and lessee, and whether it's a hotelier, a bed and breakfast, a landlord, or just a person who's allowing someone to have space in their home, and we're having the same thing is true of these rideshare programs.
The leaves are falling. It's fall. Any new guidelines on yard waste?
No, we're trying it again this year, and we're going to try some different approaches to it, but I can tell you that it's so weather dependent in two ways. It's weather dependent on when those leaves fall, and obviously that's even the variety of the tree dependent, but it's, as they fall, and we try to go through and collect what happened to us last year. It was probably the worst year was we had the early snowfall, and the exact same staff and vehicles that are used for leaf collection are also used for snow control. So we can't do both. And when that happens, especially when the temperature falls and that snow's on them and those leaves freeze, we can't vacuum. It would ruin the machines. So it's weather dependent from both directions, from when the fall really kicks in, but also when the winter kicks in. And I think people really would love for us to be out there vacuuming all the time. But we don't, I know people might feel like this is an irresponsible thing to say, but I'll try to explain it. We don't fully staff for 100% leaf collection. It just wouldn't be responsible to do it. It'd be unaffordable to do it, not sustainable for our budget. So we really encourage people to, as much as possible, do as much as they can to not require leaf collection by composting and mowing the leaves, and some people really don't want to do that. We understand that. But the one thing I will beg people to do is that if you are going to depend on us to come and vacuum those leaves, is that when you rake them, only to the curb, not into the curb. And It is a mess when they get into the street because they cars are distributing them all over the place. But worse than that is what we went through recently here with these heavy rains, is those leaves get washed to the sewers and it results in flooding. So please only rake to the curb, not into the curb.
All right. One more I just see on Twitter. I always try to find a little zinger to end with. And, okay. And Jeb on Twitter wanted five words that you would associate with Bloomington. He was doing a survey. I thought, what a great way to end the interview with Mayor Cruzan. Five words that you would associate
words
with Bloomington.
Does he want it to be one sentence or just five
just
words?
Just five words.
Eclectic, philosophical, fun, growing, ours. O-U-R-S, not H.